Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world. Featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's Friday, February 15th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your normal daily audio stash. Remember, marijuana isn't going to re-legalize itself. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Join up with the talented volunteer activists of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or make a financial contribution at norml.org. Friday is Cannabis Community Appreciation Day on the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're going to speak with our usual Friday guest, Steve Bloom, the webmaster at celebstoner.com, with a look at Amy Winehouse's Grammy wins and the reaction to her battles with addiction from Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones. We also chat a bit about the recent steroids and baseball testimony on Capitol Hill and TV host Rachel Ray's love of the Showtime hit Weeds. We've got some fresh reggae music for you from the Easy Star All-Stars with Until That Day. And we wrap things up with the first of my radical rants about marijuana in our society today. So sit back and relax with your portable podcast player and your favorite strain and enjoy your normal daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. The American College of Physicians calls on the federal government to reschedule marijuana for medicinal purposes. The nation's largest organization of doctors of internal medicine, the American College of Physicians, has issued a 13-page paper calling on the government to remove marijuana from the Schedule I classification, which declares the herb to have no medicinal value. The ACP position paper urges the use of non-smoked forms of cannabis, as well as further research to identify the illnesses best treated with cannabis and the proper dosages for specific conditions. It called for a further research into cannabis as a pain reliever for conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis, as an aid to treatment of neurological and movement disorders such as spasticity, pain and tremor in patients with multiple sclerosis, and spinal cord injuries and other trauma. The declaration could put new pressure on Washington lawmakers and government regulators who for decades have rejected attempts to reclassify marijuana. Bruce Merkin, a San Francisco spokesman for the Marijuana Policy Project, said the ACP position is, quote, an earthquake that's going to rattle the whole medical marijuana debate. The group, he said, pulverized the government's two favorite myths about medical marijuana, that it's not supported by the medical community, and that science hasn't shown marijuana to have medical value, end quote. But officials at the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy said calls for legalizing medical marijuana were misguided. What this would do is drag us back to 14th century medicine, said Beth Madras, the agency's deputy director for demand reduction. It's so arcane. Well, when I see a story like this, I can only help to comment here that we're not dragging back to the 14th century. What we're trying to do is to pull medicine back out of the 20th century and all the prohibition reefer madness that was enacted without the benefit of scientific or medical testimony, all the way back in 1937. If marijuana had never been heard of, if it carried no societal baggage and was suddenly discovered growing in some remote rainforest, scientists and doctors would be hailing it as a new wonder drug. Humans have used cannabis as medicine for our entire recorded history, and the 70-plus years of its prohibition are a historical anomaly. Chelsea Clinton says her mom, Hillary, won't crack down on marijuana. Dayton, Ohio. Chelsea Clinton is a daughter who is very proud of her mom. She said so repeatedly during a talk on Wednesday, February 13th, at Sinclair Community College. In a forum where she answered dozens of questions from the crowd of mostly students and staff, Chelsea Clinton, 27, displayed a practically encyclopedic knowledge of the policies proposed by presidential candidate Senator Hillary Clinton. Quote, I do believe this is the most important election in my lifetime, Chelsea said. My mom is the better candidate, end quote. Questions posed by audience members ran the gamut, with just one person asking the stereotypical college kid question. Clinton parried his question about her mother's stance on marijuana prohibition by saying that, given the problems currently facing the nation, Senator Clinton had no plan to crack down on marijuana. Once again, we get a story like this that comes across the news desk, and you see the typical media reaction to someone's questioning about marijuana policies. They try to dismiss the question as a stereotypical college kid question. That college kid could lose his scholarships and grant money and student loans if he were caught with marijuana. 830,000 lives are shattered each year due to the ancillary harms of a marijuana arrest. Our domestic police are militarized against our own citizens, breaking down doors and terrifying Americans who might be gardening in their basement. So when Chelsea Clinton says her mother has no plans to crack down on marijuana, I would have to ask, does she have any plans to lighten up on marijuana? Cannabis decriminalization bill approved in State Senate of Vermont. Montpelier, Vermont. It's on to the Vermont House now for a bill that would relax penalties on Vermonters caught with small amounts of marijuana. The Vermont Senate gave final approval to the bill Thursday after defeating an amendment that would have given prosecutors the decision-making power over whether minor cases should be sent to court diversion. The bill calls for defendants to have the choice of court diversion or paying a fine when they're caught with up to an ounce of marijuana. Opponents said the bill sends the wrong message to young people, while supporters said it would match state law with the existing practice of prosecutors. And New Hampshire subcommittee approves pot decriminalization bill. Concord, New Hampshire. A House subcommittee yesterday approved a bill to reduce the consequences of possessing small amounts of marijuana. The Criminal Justice and Public Safety subcommittee voted 3-1 to reduce to a violation, punishable by a $200 fine, the possession of less than 1/4 ounce of marijuana. It's not clear when the full committee will vote on the bill. Current law makes possession of marijuana a misdemeanor, which carries a fine and a criminal record upon conviction. A violation would not mean a record, Representative David Welch, Republican of Kingston, said. Quote, young folks who aren't always making intelligent choices could screw up their chances at a Pell Grant for college later on under current law, he said. End quote. Well, of course, I would prefer to see that we move on to full re-legalization of the herb. You got to realize that the general public isn't going to go along until we take some incremental steps toward that goal. And the first incremental step is decriminalization. 12 states in the United States have decriminalized the possession of marijuana so that a person doesn't have an arrest or a record. And we're hoping that Vermont and New Hampshire can join those 12 states. Well, listeners, it's with a heavy heart that we have to deliver some bad news. One of the most revered members of the cannabis community has passed away suddenly and unexpectedly, Mr. John Morgan. And so I'm bringing on Keith Stropp, the founder and legal counsel for the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws. And Keith, welcome back to the Stash.
Thank you, Russ. Nice to be with you. I'm sorry to be with you on such a sad occasion.
I'm sorry, too. And I'd just like to give you this opportunity to memorialize Mr. Morgan, and if you could explain to our listeners his impact in the cannabis community and how he'll be missed.
Well, I'll tell you, for a lot of people, if they don't recognize John's name immediately, now a lot of people will because he's been a major player for the last two decades, but if you remember the book Marijuana Myths, Marijuana Facts,
oh, yes.
It was a wonderful book that was published about 8 or 10 years ago, and it really attempted to resurrect all of the arguments that our opponents use against legalizing marijuana and to answer them in a rational manner. And it was co-authored by John's dear friend Lynn Zimmer, who was also a board member of Normal for a number of years, and another dear friend. John was one of my closest friends, a man I admire almost more than anyone I know. He's just a loving, caring individual who would fly across the country on his own nickel to help out some poor person who was being prosecuted on a marijuana case. I've seldom known an expert who was so willing to give him his time and his money and his energy to try to fix things on this issue. John joined the Normal Board of Directors, I think, in 1994 or 1995 and served for at least 10 years before he stepped aside and went on our advisory board. He was the person we turned to most often when there was an allegation, a new study that came out that said marijuana causes your hair to fall out or marijuana causes your teeth to fall out or whatever the latest charge was. John was one of those physicians and researchers who would sit down and take the time to answer those charges based on the research that's available, and we would then use that to respond. And without that kind of expert support, frankly, you get blown away in the political debate. Lester Grinspoon at Harvard and John Morgan, who was at the City University of New York, were for many, many years the two major experts that Normal relied on to save us from the pseudoscience of the Reefer Madness group. So I am honestly heartbroken today to learn of his death. He was such a good friend.
And this is so tough sometimes for the people who are the professionals in these arenas, in science and medicine, to be the first little mole to stick their head out of the gopher hole to proclaim what we all know is true about marijuana and cannabis. So to take those risks when you're working at a university, when you're a professor, when you're a doctor like that, that definitely shows a great deal of personal courage.
Oh, he was so personally committed. First off, by the way, I would tell you, and John would have been the first to tell you, that he loved smoking marijuana. He enjoyed it. He smoked most of his life. He was a fan of jazz and fan of a wonderful aficionado of jazz music, and he studied the whole history of marijuana music. He did a show, about an hour-long show that he did at several Normal conferences where he actually went back and recorded all of the early turn of the century and early reefer music. And it was just, he appreciated the culture of marijuana, not just marijuana smoking, and he thought all of it deserved to be archived and saved and analyzed. We are going to miss that man. We will certainly move forward, but I can tell you that there will be a hole in our hearts for John Morgan. He was a wonderful, wonderful man.
I think you bring up a good point there, too, because we do have a lot of people who will recognize the scientific or the public policy issues with regard to cannabis and understand that our prohibition has failed. And yet, as far as the cultural issues or the personal use of marijuana, they'll sometimes look down their nose or think that it's an immature thing to do, that you'll grow out of that phase. And so that someone with that, you know, that is that esteemed and that respected in the scientific community to also be able to turn and respect the cannabis community, the people and their culture regarding cannabis, I think that speaks volumes to the man. Dr. John P. Morgan was a physician and professor of pharmacology at the City University of New York Medical School. He graduated from the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine in 1965. He began his current position at City College in 1977, where his teaching included the topics of pharmacology, clinical pharmacology, and drug policy. Dr. Morgan published approximately 100 articles, book chapters, and books, largely focused on clinical pharmacology of psychoactive drugs. Recently, his research and writing has involved issues such as urine testing in the American workplace, medical marijuana, the sociopharmacology of crack cocaine, alcohol prevalence during national prohibition, and physician prescribing practices. Dr. Morgan was a member of numerous professional associations, including the American Society of Addiction Medicine, the American Society of Clinical Pharmacology and Therapeutics, and the American Council on Science and Health, and he served on the advisory board of the Drug Policy Alliance and NORML. From all of us in the cannabis community and NORML, Dr. Morgan will be sorely missed. Our condolences go out to his friends and family. Cannabis Community Day here Friday on the Stash, and we've got some great news coming out of the West Coast in the Los Angeles Times. We covered it in our news segment earlier about the American College of Physicians, front page news in the LA Times, recommending the descheduling of marijuana from Schedule 1. I'm sitting here with Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And Alan, what do you think about the impact of this statement today?
Huge day, Russ. Glad to be with you. And this is big in medical marijuana. In the 35-year history of trying to reform the laws, one of the biggest impediments is getting doctors' groups to weigh in politically on this very contentious and friction-filled issue of medical access to marijuana. And so today, the American College of Physicians, the second largest body of doctors in the United States, weighed in very strongly that the government should reschedule marijuana to make it, one, both available for medical access, and two, to certainly make the plant material more available for medical research.
Yeah, we see a lot of these medical groups that either won't give an answer with regard to marijuana's medical use, or they'll give, you know, conflicting or contradictory statements. One such group would be the American Medical Association. And why would you think that this American College of Physicians might be more influential than the American Medical Association?
Well, I think for those who are familiar with the American Medical Association and its politics over its long history, and for those of us who are the children of physicians, many of whom do not like the AMA and its policies, well, it's highly politicized. It's highly influenced by pharmaceutical companies. It's highly influenced by government agencies that regulate doctors like the DEA and FDA. It's highly influenced by insurance companies and medical device manufacturers. Anybody who's familiar with their publications and where they get their funding realize, well, where their bread is buttered. And so even though it's the largest body of doctors in the United States, you're quite right to point out that they've had a terrific conflicting attitude and public statements around medical marijuana. So to date, we have the Student American Medical Association, the next generation of doctors. Since 1999, they have been strongly in favor of medical marijuana. We now have the American Nurses Association, which arguably, at least in my view, is probably one of the most important breakdowns in health-associated groups that should be working in favor of it, and they are. Nurses are crucial in the public health system. And we have the American Public Health Association itself, which covers doctors and nurses and psychiatrists and licensed clinical social workers and all kinds of folks that work in delivering public health. They, too, are in favor of medical access. So, frankly, it's really only the American Medical Association proper that does not support, one, access to medical marijuana, and two, allowing more research by allowing the plant material to be readily used by physicians and researchers who are finding out whether marijuana is helpful or therapeutic, because one of the chronic imminent problems with the whole science around medical marijuana is because, one, the government controls almost all the funding through NIDA, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and two, it has a complete 100% control on the plant material by only allowing the University of Mississippi at Oxford to grow marijuana, and researchers who want access to that marijuana can only be looking for the harmful effects of marijuana. So the whole system is completely rigged, and largely, I think the American College of Physicians statements today recognize that.
Yeah, what we get from the federal government all the time, you know, the two pillars of their anti-marijuana policy seem to be that, number one, it's not supported by the medical community, and number two, science hasn't shown marijuana to have medical value. But as you point out, if they don't allow the scientists to discover the medical value, that makes it a whole lot easier to say it doesn't have medical value.
Well, it even better, and there's a couple of terrific points made in this LA Times article, and that is, one, that, you know, this really does point out and knocks out two of the major foundations of the ONDCP's argument about keeping medical marijuana banned, and that is, one, that there is no medical communities that support access. Well, that is absolutely clearly wrong. And two, that there isn't a scientific base for this entire discussion. And to sort of drive the point home about how isolated and ridiculous our federal government is, when asked about this, Bertha Madras, who is the Deputy Demand Reduction Coordinator over at the ONDCP, said that, you know, this is a terrible thing to do, and it would drag us back to the 14th century regarding medicine. It's arcane. There's no such thing as smoked medicines. And when asked by the LA Times, you know, what it would take to change the law, she said it would take the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to approve leafy cannabis material, which she didn't think was likely. Well, boy, blessed that she's not suffering and needing medical cannabis.
Yeah, and I always say, you know, when she says this thing about bringing us back to the 14th century, I like to say that we're pulling them out of the 20th century. The prohibition that was enacted against marijuana was enacted without testimony from the medical or scientific communities at the time, who were well aware that people all across the United States and around the world had been using cannabis for medicine for centuries.
Indeed, I think you'll appreciate this very high irony, Russ, that we just were talking about the American Medical Association. Well, as you well know, who is the only group to officially oppose prohibition?
The American Medical Association.
Correct.
Well, we've been speaking with Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of Normal. Check out the website at normal.org. We've got more details on that story also up at our Stash site at stash.normal.org. Alan, thanks again. It's always a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thanks. Take care, Russ.
I will. Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, it's been an exciting first week for me as your host here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, and one of my favorite things about doing the stash is getting the opportunity to find all this great new music from all these independent artists. A lot of our music comes from PromoNet, and they get us the PodSafe music that we can play. And this latest song I've got for you is from the Easy Star All-Stars. They've got a new EP coming out called Until That Day. And, you know, it just ain't a cannabis party until you start playing some reggae. So let's get into the reggae grooves. You're jamming along with the Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Worship my mouth until that day.
Caesar, Caesar, Caesar.
Take your money and go away.
Caesar,
take your money and go away.
Caesar,
worship my mouth until that day. International morality. Says the power of the Trinity. The African continent,
Lord,
shall not know peace. But we will fight if necessary. For we know we have the victory. So go away,
Caesar.
Take your money and go away,
Caesar.
Wash up my mouth until that day. Shut my mouth until that day.
Show them love and all they show us was vulgarity. No similarity, so change up on a polarity. With that barbarity, I have no familiarity. Easy stars, priorities, the fight for solidarity. Philosophy that gives only one race superiority. Give for the majority, not the minority. The minority, of course, that's no authority.
Then on them of inferiority, why?
Go away,
Caesar.
Take your money and go away,
Caesar.
Worship my mouth until that day.
Caesar, Caesar, Caesar.
Take your money and go away.
Caesar,
take all of your money and go away.
Caesar,
run up my mouth until that day.
Lord, shall not know peace.
All right, well, it's Friday here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash, and that's our time here to take a look at the celebrity and entertainment news, plus some of the political news happening in the world of the cannabis community here with our frequent guest, Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Steve, welcome back to the Stash.
Hey, Russ. How are you, man?
I'm doing good. This is my first opportunity to get to talk to you, having taken over the hosting duties here. So I was checking out the site, and of course, I encourage everyone to go check out CelebStoner.com. It's got the top 10 celeb stoners and news on sports and movie reviews. There's plenty of stuff there. And right there on the front page, we get all the latest news that's happening in the world of entertainment and music. And the big entertainment story this week, of course, was the Grammy Awards, where we had Amy Winehouse, who won many awards there at the Grammys, for especially for Record of the Year. And Steve, why don't you give the audience just a little breakdown of what's going on with this whole Amy Winehouse situation?
Well, Amy Winehouse had a had a big year in 2007. It continues in 2008 by winning 5 Grammy Awards. There was a lot of suspense and drama at the award show last Sunday night. First of all, Amy Winehouse was nominated in 6 categories, and all the 4 major categories, was not allowed into the U.S. to attend the show. The reason for that was that she's, her sort of much publicized drug problems and alcohol problems. She was arrested for marijuana in Norway earlier, back in, I think it was October, and she's had ongoing problems, including a crack video that surfaced on the web just about a week or two before the Grammys, and so that kind of slammed the door on her, apparently, that the U.S. wouldn't let her in. So the Grammys had to sort of come up with a another way to handle her appearance. She ended up appearing via satellite from a theater in London, and she they held it to the last part of the show, as they kept advertising that she would be on the show, and it was in the last half hour they finally beamed into London, and she did a performance of 2 of her songs. She's famous for the song Rehab. She also did I Told You I Was Trouble, and she just didn't seem very steady on her feet. She hadn't performed a lot lately, and she seemed a little wobbly. She was kind of slurry. I kind of described it as doing her best Billie Holiday imitation, that, she just kind of, wasn't quite all there. But at the same time, the band was cracking behind her, sounded very good. And then she had been picking up awards throughout the night, and then finally, after her performance, she was given the Record of the Year award, and she made a speech referring to her husband Blake, who's in jail currently, and about the fires that had swept through this area called Camden the night before in North London, and she more or less came very close to sweeping the Grammy. She won 5 out of 6, but in a big surprise, the last award, the biggest award of the night, the Album of the Year, went to Herbie Hancock, a jazz musician who is one of the great pianists of all time. But a very unlikely winner for the overall, Album of the Year. Well, there was a little bit of a backlash. After Amy Winehouse won all the awards, Natalie Cole, I guess it was that night, at the press interviews, she was asked what did she think of Amy Winehouse winning all the awards. She said, "I don't think she should have won." And she went on to say it sends a bad message to our young people who are trying to get into the business. The ones who are trying to do it right and really try to keep themselves together. We have to stop rewarding bad behavior. The girl really has a problem. I mean, she could die. You just don't do your drugs and get on stage and get rewarded. I don't take anything away from her talent, but I just feel she's stepping into a place that she hasn't earned yet. It's interesting to come from Amy, from Natalie Cole, who had her own drug problems back in the 70s and 80s and went through rehab. Maybe that's why she's taking this position against Amy Winehouse. And Natalie Cole won her first award when she was 25, and Amy Winehouse was 24, so I'm not sure why Amy Winehouse is less deserving than Natalie Cole. And then, furthermore, the week before the Grammys, you had the Stones, of all people, and, members, knocking Amy Winehouse. You had Keith Richards basically saying that she should get her act together.
Yeah.
And you had Mick Jagger saying, "When we experimented with drugs, little was known about the effects. In our time, there was no rehab centers like today." Really wasn't a knock, but it was more, Keith Richards kind of saying, "Get your act together." And I think Keith is kind of saying, "Hey, I've done this all these years, doing all kinds of drugs, and I haven't really run down the street, you know, in my panties and bra, you know, acting, you know, in bad shape, or, you know, been seen on a video doing crack. I mean, Keith Richards has a long-term reputation for having used heroin and
sure.
all kinds of things like that. So it's just kind of a fun development of how everybody's kind of treating her these days.
Yeah, I'm really shocked to hear, you know, for Keith Richards to stand there and tell someone what they should or shouldn't be doing with their drug use. That's kind
of,
you know.
Both of them, in a sense, should talk. You know, Keith Richards and Natalie Cole.
Yeah, we're talking pot and kettle territory here.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, Natalie Cole's on her own problems, and, you know, she should really talk. She should actually be lauding Amy Winehouse and saying, hey, listen, let's just hope she gets better, you know, congratulations for winning your awards.
Yeah, and the other thing that I would think about this is when Natalie Cole says something to the effect of, you know, giving her an award, a Grammy award, for her musical talent and her compositions is somehow sending a bad message because she takes drugs. Shouldn't the Grammy Awards be about your talent and your composition, period, regardless if you're, you know, eating cornflakes in the morning? It should be about the songs and the music, not your personal life.
Well, the problem for celebrities these days is, you know, it's always, you know, this issue of how will children, you know, respond. You know, there's this big issue, you know, now, of course, over the steroids and baseball, and everybody's talking about, you know, Roger Clemens and, you know, how, you know, young athletes, you know, will deal with, you know, the drug issue when they see that someone like Clemens, who apparently, you know, used steroids and HGH, you know, did so well, you know, while using those drugs, and it, you know, Barry Bonds and other players who have extended their careers. And so it all comes back constantly with celebrities and athletes is, you know, how it's going to affect the kids and stuff like that. And, you know, and of course, you know, the music fans are very young and they're impressionable. And there's no question. It means people aren't going to look at it and say, hey, you know, look at Amy Winehouse. She's a bit of a mess, yet, you know, she can put out some great music. So, you know, they want a perfection. They want the person to be just right. You know, they don't want, you know, they want the music to be great, they want the personal life to be perfect, and, you know, and then that's the exact way that, you know, you can honor somebody, or you could, you know, look up to them and see them as the so-called role model. You know, with the media being so present everywhere 24/7, you could see, you know, every element of people sort of personally melting down, you know, right in the media. So, you know, it's pretty clear that her behavior is, you know, is dangerous to herself.
Yeah,
and that's probably the biggest problem. But the broader issue is, you know, what does it represent in the music community when you honor somebody whose music is great, but her personal life, you know, needs, you know, some improvement?
Well, I also wonder, you know, when we get that comment from Keith Richards talking about, you know, well, I did this and that, and I was able to take care of it, and not, you know, like he said, be running down the street in his bra and panties, which. Thanks for the visual on that one. But, you know, it's a different time. You know, coming up through the 60s and 70s, you didn't have TMZ and packs of paparazzi and 24/7 cable news coverage and blogs and websites all devoted to following your every little detail of your life. I don't think they could have taken that kind of scrutiny
exactly.
back then.
You really wouldn't have known, you know. I mean, the way you'd know, you know, back then, you know, what the Rolling Stones were doing was by reading, you know, report in the, you know, the newspapers, and that's as far as it would go. And maybe you would, you know, get onto TV if it was a big news story. But for the most part, you know, it's just not this cycle of news the way there is now. And
now you made a brief mention there also about Pettit and Clemens, these guys up on Capitol Hill testifying about steroids and baseball. There's another headline on your site here about John Rocker saying the Texas Rangers condoned steroids use. And this gets me to a point that I always like to make. You know, you mentioned how it was, you know, the celebrities and athletes are looked upon as role models, and, you know, what's the message we're sending to the children. But very rarely do we look behind the curtain at the industries that promote this. I mean, we've seen a lot of the reports now where, you know, the people in baseball were turning a blind eye to the steroid use because they knew it was increasing home run productivity. It was increasing gate receipts. They were getting more money from it. When we talk about the celebrities or the musicians, you know, how many stories have we heard of the musician being propped up by the manager, you know, given that last fix to get on stage so that you can get the show underway. You know, I think we need to stop blaming the people who are the talented ones in the front of the camera or, you know, at the home plate ready to bat, and start looking at the industries behind them that help to cover up and support this kind of abuse.
I agree. There's no question. They're pushing them out there. But, you know, I mean, the whole baseball thing, for sure, you know, there was, you know, tacit understanding that things were changing in baseball as these players were getting bigger and hitting more and more home runs. And, you know, baseball just dealt with it with a wink and a nod, you know, until, you know, it became, you know, more and more of an issue. I mean, there have been players that have died from steroids. Ken Caminiti, he died. Lyle Alzado, the football player. What's interesting about the statement from the John Rocker, who is, you know, honestly not to be believed, you know, in a lot of ways, some of the things he's said in the past, but nevertheless, you know, he said that he and several other members of the Texas Rangers back earlier in this decade were taken aside by trainers and told, you know, that steroids, not so much that they shouldn't use steroids, but they shouldn't overuse it. That don't do it for 10 months out of the year. You know, use it very periodically when you feel it's necessary. And it was more like advice like that, you know, which is actually probably good advice, which is, you know, because I'm not opposed to steroids in baseball. It's just, you know, the abuse of it, you know, and players take their chances by using it. You know, you use it to, you know, you're sort of your own guinea pig deciding, you know, how your body's going to respond, you know, to these types of injections. So it was kind of, again, tacitly accepted back then when the league really wasn't going after it. But by 2003, when the league started to take a stand against steroids, and then 2005 going after HGH, human growth hormone, then, you know, and then, you know, the public eye has been, you know, a lot, you know, more fixed on, you know, what players look like, what they're producing on the field, and how it's, you know, how it's sort of artificially changing the game in a sense.
Yeah, it always strikes me as odd when people talk about the steroids issue and they say, well, it's, you know, it's artificially inflating the game, it's cheating, it's a artificial way of becoming a better athlete, and yet we never, you know, it's only the chemical means that we think that of. We don't think that of, say, arthroscopic knee surgery. How many players back in the 50s and 60s would have been better players had they been able to get their knees scoped out? Now, let's go to this other story here. This one caught my eye because, of course, I'm a big fan of the Showtime show Weeds with Mary Louise Parker. And then my wife is a big fan of the Rachel Ray show where she does the kind of the cooking talk show. And apparently we've had a meeting of the minds here on the Rachel Ray show.
Well, this week, Mary Louise Parker, who, you know, is the star of Weeds, she plays Nancy Botwin, the suburban pot dealing soccer mom in the in Weeds, which is on Showtime and has, you know, had three seasons, and, you know, I don't think I need to explain too much to the listeners out there. I'm sure they're pretty familiar as long as they have Showtime. And Rachel Ray has a daytime talk show, kind of cooking show, and you know, an hourly show, and she brings on all kinds of guests, you know, in the similar kind of Oprah fashion. They sit around, they chat, and. And so Mary Louise Parker was on this week, and Rachel Ray just did a lot of gushing. And so it led me to believe that, you know, that she loves the show so much that, who knows, maybe she's a stoner herself. And actually I had this discussion with a friend of mine last night. You know, if you're a big fan of Weeds, does that generally mean you're a stoner? And you know, we didn't come to a conclusion, but I kind of raised the point, you know, if you're really going to like this show a lot, you probably have to have a little bit of an investment in it, you know, that you smoke a little pot and you see that show is representing, you know, your lifestyle and you get behind it. So Rachel Ray, in her introduction, you know, to Mary Louise Parker, said that for me there's a few shows that I absolutely love. One of those shows is Weeds. I'll sit up all night to catch up on Weeds. I actually love the show. It's some of the best writing in television. And she continues to say the thing I find most unusual about Weeds is that it's kind of a nice family show in a weird way. And, you know, she had brought Mary Louise Parker out. They were sitting at a table, and Mary Louise Parker's answer to that was, you know, we have a nice little time around our kitchen table, and that she kind of deadpan sorting out the dime bags, which is kind of a funny line. And so it was just sort of an interesting conversation, you know, from the point of view of these two women. But mostly it was really about, you know, Mary Louise Parker, and she was asked by Rachel Ray, you know, if people, you know, now that she's kind of most famous for Weeds, you know, stop her in the street and, you know, kind of how do they react to her? And she told a story about how she was standing on a corner in New York waiting for a cab. She's with her baby. She has a very young child that she had adopted just late last year. And a guy pulls over and he's like, hey, can I buy a fat one from you? And she was, and her thing was like, I can't believe this guy's asking. And she was kind of, her joke back was, well, hey, you know, do you want a graham cracker? Because this is like basically what she had to give. She had the kid in her hand.
All right. Well, we've covered music and sports and TV. Let's end up here with a little bit of coverage of what's going on in the political race. Of course, it looks like John McCain's going to be the nominee for the Republicans, and we really don't need to talk very much about what his marijuana policies might be. But on the other side, we've got Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama still running. I noticed that you're getting a lot of response here about Barack Obama and his recent comments, whether or not he would or would not decriminalize. Chelsea Clinton, she was on the stump here talking about how her mom would have no plans to crack down on marijuana. So what are the latest with the presidential candidates?
Well, you know, as far as Chelsea's comment, I mean, she was in Dayton, Ohio, and she was asked a question about marijuana, and it was paraphrased in the newspaper, so that's pretty much all we know, that she basically was saying, you know, it's not going to be a big issue, it's not going to go after marijuana smokers, you know, which nobody anticipates Hillary would, but, you know, would Hillary change the laws or just, you know, keep the status quo, and I kind of tend to think she would, you know, keep the status quo. You know, the big issue and the big question is Obama. You know, because of the video that came out a couple of weeks ago via the Washington Times that showed him speaking at Northwestern University in 2004 and saying that the drug war was an utter failure and he would, you know, decriminalize the marijuana laws, though he would not legalize, you know, marijuana. He made the distinction, and sort of we're, you know, still need to sort of find out, you know, with Obama, you know, what the distinction in his mind is. I mean, obviously, you know, we know there's a distinction. I mean, one would remove criminal penalties and one would completely, you know, wipe, you know, all the laws off the books and, you know, make marijuana completely legal. And there is obviously a distinction, you know, with the 12 states around the country that, you know, have decriminalization. And by the way, Vermont, the Senate of Vermont just passed a decrim bill, so they're moving in that direction. They could become the 13th state very soon. But, you know, there's been a real controversy in the marijuana community over Obama. Now, you know, via Celeb Stoner, we've taken a major stance in favor of Obama. We've endorsed Obama. We feel Obama is the Stoner's candidate. There's no candidate out there, you know, that would possibly stand up for marijuana smokers like Obama. He's the first major presidential candidate in 32 years to, you know, at least make a statement in favor of decriminalizing marijuana, you know, since Jimmy Carter did in the, you know, in 76. So, you know, but everybody's kind of questioning, you know, the response from Obama's camp to when that video came out, you know, and the response was, one reply from the spokespeople was that he's always favored decriminalization, and another response was kind of a backpedaling that, you know, this is not, you know, where he stands. So, you know, I'm taking the stance right now via Celeb Stoner that until we hear directly from Obama, I'm going to believe that what he said in 2004 is what he believes, what he means, you know, that he hasn't stepped back from that. Now, a lot of people are looking and parsing every little word and everything that out there on the web right now regarding, you know, Obama and marijuana, and we don't know really much more, honestly, you know, and my feeling was, and we discussed it on last week's Audio Stash, was that it's kind of understandable that they weren't going to jump into the middle of this fray at this point. I mean, he's got a very tight race. You know, he's winning over the Stoners just by the mere fact that he's admitted his use, you know, in his book in the past. You know, most candidates would not, you know, generally admit their use in such an upfront way. He's stated in the, you know, the what is now considered kind of a classic video clip where he was, you know, asked if he inhaled, and he said that when I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Yes.
You know, it's just clever. And, you know, he's the kind of antithesis of Bill Clinton at this point in the way he's dealing with this issue. So, you know, I just think it's just let's wait and see, you know, where does he stand on this? And what I in this week's column, in this week's, you know, on the website, we quoted Michael Goodwin, who's a nationally syndicated columnist whose column appears in the Daily News here in New York. And I thought what he said was really on target. He didn't really deal with, you know, that issue of parsing whether, you know, Obama is for or against decriminalizing marijuana. It was more dealing with, you know, the admission of his use. And so he goes, Hillary's little lies about her campaign remind me of the way Bill started his presidential race in 1992. In March of that year, a Daily News reporter asked him whether he'd ever used drugs. Clinton answered firmly, I have never broken the laws of my country. Technically true, but in plain English, a lie. The desired implication that his answer was no was misleading because he later admitted he had smoked marijuana in London. Even then, Clinton had to suggest he was innocent, saying he never inhaled. Fast forward 16 years to Obama. After admitting in his first book he used drugs, including marijuana, Obama was asked by a playful reporter whether he had inhaled. Obama smiled and said that was the point. The topic is narrow, but the contrast is striking, and that's the point. If we can't trust politicians to tell us the truth on small things, why should we trust them on the big things? We won't know soon enough whether Obama's time has come and whether he can meet his own standards, but we don't have to wait for a verdict on something that transcends him. The enthusiasm he's generated already proves that politics doesn't have to be just another lie.
Well, you know, and we've seen with this admission from Barack Obama, you know, just straight out, you know, I inhaled frequently, that was the point. We get a nice story arc if you just look through the past couple of decades politically. You know, you look back to the 1980s and Judge Ginsburg nominated to the Supreme Court. His nomination was sunk because it was found that he had used marijuana. We get Bill Clinton in the 90s. He admits it, but then has to backpedal and kind of say, well, I didn't inhale and it was a bad thing and so on. So we've gone from, you know, you can't be a smoker to you can be a smoker, but you have to lie about it, to now you could have smoked and so what? Big deal.
Hey, you know, we've come a long way, baby.
All right. Well, we're talking with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Everybody, go out to the website there, CelebStoner.com. There's all sorts of polls. Who should be the next top celeb stoner? We've got Andy Dick, Kate Hudson, Bill Lee, George Michael, Barack Obama, and Keith Richards as the poll out there. So answer the poll. Get the next top celeb stoner out there. Steve, thanks again for joining us here on The Stash.
Hey, thanks for having me, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our policy analyst is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org, and you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from former President Richard Nixon, who once said, quote, "Soft-headed psychiatrists who work in places like the National Institute for Mental Health favor marijuana because they're probably all on the stuff themselves," end quote. 37 years later, Nixon's war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs rages on. With your continued support, we will undo the damage Nixon wrought upon our American hemp heritage.